And what I would like for you to do is, let's just have everybody meet here in this room at 1:30, okay? And then I can kind of give you the guidelines on what we're going to be up to. And then I mentioned the other day that what I'm going to have you do is get together in small teams, small groups, and look at a number of these pre-selected monoliths and try your hand at actually doing some profile descriptions in terms of coming up with horizon designations. And I think you're going to find it pretty challenging. I suspect you'll struggle with the first few, and maybe towards the end of things you'll start to feel a little more confident. But anyhow, we'll do that. And then I think I also mentioned this, we'll probably just carry that lab through next week, so you can more or less use the monoliths. That they'll be available most any time if you want to take a look at them. And again, this won't be anything that you turn in, but it's just exercise designed to get you a little more comfortable with looking at a soil profile and trying to assign specific horizon designations. Okay. The other thing I want to mention, I'm going to just turn this off since it isn't going to work. We started talking about the models of soil formation on Tuesday, and we spent a little bit of time on the five factors of soil formation. Hopefully everybody remembers what those are, and I don't know how much detail you got about in Soil 205 or 206, but we're actually going to spend several class periods next week looking at some of the specific effects of the five soil forming factors and how they influence soil development. But before we do that, I want to talk about something else as well. And I had written the formula up here for the five soil forming factors. Everybody remembers the CLORT. And I pointed out that one of the shortcomings of this is that it's not really a mathematically solvable type of equation. And you know, all science gets quantitative at some point. And I showed you an example using the terrace system down in Boise, how you might use soil morphology to, in combination with this model of five factors of soil formation, and come up with some mathematical or quantitative expressions. And what I had shown you was the accumulation of calcium, carbonate, and silica in some of these different age soils. So you go out, you measure the amount of calcium carbonate or silica that's present in those soils, and then you plot it out as a function of age, and you can develop a mathematical description or relationship that can in some cases be applied elsewhere. And I think I also made the comment that most of what we know about rates of soil formation and the different aspects of quantitative pedology really come from that sort of an approach. So all we're doing is using the soil forming factors, and if you take something like time, let's say we keep climate, organisms, relief, parent material constant, time's the only variable, and we called that a what? What was the fancy word for?
Chronosequence.
Yeah, chronosequence of soils. And similarly, you can have a topo sequence of soils where all the factors except for relief would be the same. You can have a litho sequence where parent material is really the only variable. Climate and organisms, generally those are not going to be independent of one another, except in some very specialized cases. So usually when climate varies, organisms do too, at least the native organisms. And so if you vary those, you might end up with something known as a bioclimal sequence. And we'll you'll probably see some examples of this as we go on. But as I said, we're going to spend more time on each of these factors of soil formation. And before we do, though, I want to talk about a second model that has also been very influential in terms of the way we think about soil formation and the development of different properties and horizons. And this is something known as the generalized process model. And this was put out in, I think it was 1959, soil scientist named Roy Simonson. And he kind of came at this whole issue of soil formation from a little bit different standpoint. And instead of attributing what we see in a soil profile to different combinations of soil forming factors, what he did was come at it from the standpoint of considering processes. And so if you've got a soil, here's a head-on shaped thing out on the landscape. So just think about this soil body, three-dimensional. What Simonson proposed is that there are four general processes that are going to be acting on this soil or this initial parent material, however you want to think of it. Does anybody remember this? If you took 205 from me, you might have. We went over this. Does this ring a bell with anybody? Four general processes. Okay, well, I will give you get you started on this. The first one is simply additions. And this would be additions of energy and matter to that soil body out on the landscape. What would be some examples of additions?
Like getting glacial till brought in on something.
It could be if you had an existing soil and then a glacier moved over it. Yeah, you definitely get an addition of some mineral material. What would be some other examples? Okay, lust, another example, we've got a good local example where the lust blows in, and it's happened many times here. Somebody said water, and you think about the climate as a soil forming factor. Climate actually results in the addition of matter and energy to a soil. We add water in the form of rainfall, snow, whatever case may be. You get solar energy being added to that soil as a result of sunlight, so there can be mineral material, as a couple of you pointed out, from wind or glacial action, water, what have you. Several possibilities, but the point is that this body of soil sitting out there in the landscape is subject to additions of these different forms of energy and matter. What would be a second general process then, kind of along these lines? We're adding stuff, we're losing stuff. Yeah, so we got a category of losses. And what would be some examples of losses that you might find?
Water erosion.
Okay, erosion's a good one, where we're physically removing mineral material, or it could be organic material, from that soil as a result of wind or water action. What else?
Leaching.
Leaching, where we're actually removing soil constituents through the soil profile, probably as a result of water, percolation of water down through the soil.
What about volatilization, like when you're agriculture and you're tilling the ground and you're bringing up water or minerals or anything that comes out to the surface?
Yeah, that would certainly qualify. When you plow up a soil, a good example would be the decrease in organic matter. You're actually losing carbon to the atmosphere in the form of CO2 or could be methane in some cases. There are actually a lot of examples. And for losses, you might think of them as something that is going off the surface, like erosion, or something that's actually moving out through the bottom of the soil, or even something moving laterally. And I guess that applies to the additions as well. You can add stuff to the surface. You might add things laterally if the soil is on a hill slope. A lot of possibilities there. Okay, the third generalized process is something that was originally called translocations. And maybe a simpler way of expressing that is simply transfers. And all that refers to is, here's our soil body that we take something from up here and physically move it down in the soil profile to another location. What would be some examples of materials that are translocated within a soil profile? Clays, calcium carbonate, oxides, maybe humus in some cases, where we've got alluvial humus, lots of examples of that. So we're not gaining anything or losing anything looking at that soil on the whole, but we're just redistributing it. We're taking it, typically, we think about this from an upper position in that soil, moving it downward. It can happen other direction as well, but that would be the most common. Okay, and then the fourth example, or the fourth generalized process, would be something that we call transformations. And transformations are going to refer to any sort of a change in form or shape of a soil constituent. And probably the most common examples that we think about transformations, one of them would be organic materials. Let's say we add a plant root to the soil and it dies. What happens to it? Well, it gets transformed by various microbial processes into soil organic matter or humus over time. And so we actually change the chemical or physical structure of that component. Another example would be just the whole general concept of weathering, where we think about minerals that are present in the initial soil parent material, and over time, those minerals weather. We form clays in some cases. A lot of different possibilities there, but we're altering the chemical and or physical properties of that mineral through weathering. So lots of possibilities for that. So if you think about it, most anything that goes on in a soil would fall into at least one of those four categories. Now, we do get into situations where some of these things overlap. In other words, think about the formation of an A horizon in a grassland soil. Which of those four general processes would be included? Okay, you're adding organic matter, probably in the form of grass roots, but we're also transforming it, right? Because you're taking the plant material and converting that into soil organic matter or humus. So a lot of what we see in a soil profile is a combination of some of these things. And I want to go through some examples. I think if you guys got the handout that is posted on the website, you might see some pictures of these things. But there are a number of processes that we have identified that are fairly important in the formation of soils that have specific names. And some of them represent maybe one of these general processes. Some of them actually represent a combination of them. And I'd like to go through some of the more common ones. In your textbook, you can find a whole bunch of these in page, it's page 167 and 168. And it's table 5.1 in the in chapter 5. It's a lot big table, stretches out on two pages. So let me, for my own benefit, I think this is image number 5 that's on that the handout, but unfortunately, anybody got binoculars? You can watch it from back there. But this is a figure out of the book, figure 1.9. And it's kind of what I've drawn here, except it's just done a little bit nicer. And it kind of gives you this concept of the generalized process model, where you think of soils as an open system. In other words, you've got this body of soil out there in the landscape, and these four general processes are acting upon it. And I guess I like to think of this as really the soil functioning as a biogeochemical reactor. In other words, you've got plants growing on this, you've got the input of the climate parameters, whether it's rainfall or solar insolation or whatever. you've got geologic material, and then you get this interaction. And I'm a little bit biased, but I think that soils are probably the single best integrator of all these ecosystem processes that are going on out on the landscape. And what we end up seeing in a soil profile is the net result of all those processes. So I'd like to take a little bit of time and go through some of the more common ones that we talk about relative to the common soil horizons and features that we see. I'm not going to cover every single one in that list or the table that's in your book, but I'll just go through what I think are some of the more common or more important ones. Okay, the first one that I'm going to mention is this right here, melanization. Melanization, you might recognize the root, melano. Anybody want to hazard a guess what melanization refers to? What's that? Well, yeah, what kind of color?
Dark,
yeah, and that's related to this root. Melanization is simply the darkening of a soil because of the additions of organic matter. And I think you can start to see how, in terms of general processes, there's actually a couple things going on here. We're adding organic materials, plant materials in most cases, to the soil, but it's also being transformed as well. So a lot of these things I'm going to list probably overlap into those categories. What would be the best example you can think of melanization and what it might form in a soil profile? Think of a horizon. Yeah, this is best expressed formation of an A horizon, probably in a grassland soil, because those are where we really find the well-expressed A horizons. So a lot of people kind of think of it as, you know, a big part of it is an addition. And so I'm going to kind of do it in that manner. The second one here represents an addition, and I'm going to call it cumulization. I'm not making these words up, these are in your book, but anybody want to hazard a guess as to what cumulization refers to? What's a similar word to cumulization? Accumulate, okay. And in this case, cumulization refers to the additions of mineral material at the soil surface. What would be an example of this around here? Think locally.
Luss,
good one. We've got an existing soil surface and more of this silt-sized material blows in and accumulates. Great example. What's an example of cumulization that occurred around here in 1980?
Ash.
Yeah, volcanic ash eruptions, and those have been relatively frequent if you look at the last 10,000 years around here from the Cascade volcanism. Maybe not huge amounts of material, but nevertheless accumulations of it, mineral additions at the soil surface. Oops. Here's another one out of your table. Littering. Think about this differently than you might be accustomed to. It's not throwing down paper wrappers and things like that, but anybody want to put forth a guess on what littering refers to? Yeah, what kind of? Yeah. Everyone has probably heard the term litter layer in the forest. Well, this is exactly what we're talking about with this. It's the additions of, say, forest litter. So it's mainly leaves, needles, twigs, branches, things like that. I don't know that it's specifically restricted to forests. We could really think about it as any sort of organic material being added to a soil, but probably the best example would be this. If you think about a forest floor, and every year there is going to be the addition of more organic material there. So, you know, if you think about specific horizons that might form through littering, something like an OI horizon, be a good
root turnover falling.
Well, it's I think the distinction here is, if you read about it in the textbook, littering refers to the additions at the surface, whereas the root turnover is going to be something that's actually going on within the soil.
So melanization, or
with
would you call it melanization for root turnover, or would you call it littering, or what kind of input would you call that?
Well, this melanization really is, it's primarily through root additions and then their transformations. Okay, and I guess to draw a distinction, I think more about this in a grassland soil, whereas the littering I would think about more in a forest environment, where the primary additions of organic material are going to be at the surface from leaf fall and that sort of thing, rather than through roots. So we're going to talk a little bit more about this, but those three things would all be different, I guess, manifestations of adding material to a soil, whether it's at the surface, organic material at the surface, or through the form of roots. Let's talk about a couple of mosses. And maybe the most common one, somebody already mentioned this, was leaching. And this is a term that gets widely used. It also gets widely misused. But leaching refers specifically to the loss of a soil constituent from the soil profile, okay? The loss from the soil. It's technically not correct to talk about something leaching from an E horizon into a B horizon. That's really, that's not leaching. Leaching would be the loss through the soil, where it's out of the root zone, it moves, most cases, vertically down through a soil and is lost that way. This extremely important process when you start getting into soils that form in more humid climates, more annual precipitation. Some of the older soils, they're largely defined on the basis of how much leaching has taken place. And you'll see examples later on, but typically we think about the materials that leach out of the soil, and it's going to be cations like potassium, calcium, magnesium, all three of which are plant macronutrients. They're needed in large quantities, and over time these things leach out of the soil, and you end up with a relatively low level of fertility as a result. What would be another type of loss that we should consider with soils? I think we already...
The erosion.
Yeah, just erosion. And erosion is nothing more than the physical removal of soil material. Generally, it happens at the surface, and it can occur naturally, or it can be what is termed accelerated erosion, which is what happens when we plow steep slopes like here in the Palouse, where we sort of exacerbate the whole problem. But removal of material from the soil surface, and if you think about what would be a situation where this would occur naturally, where you'd have lots of natural erosion. At the stream bank, then that'd be a good example. What else? Yes, what kind of slopes?
Steep slopes.
Imagine a hillside, the steep slope, and you've got a soil here. Most of the incident precipitation, or very high percentage on a steep slope, is probably going to run off, right? And whenever you get runoff, you have potential for erosion. And so on a steep slope, sometimes the erosion that's occurring naturally may exceed or be roughly equivalent to the rate of soil formation. So you end up with a very weakly developed soil profile just because you're removing the material about as fast as you can form it. Yeah?
Like in that example, wouldn't the eroding soil get deposited like down at the bottom of the slope?
Yeah, good point. At some point, this slope is going to break and this stuff that's moving down will begin to accumulate. What would we call that? Cumulization, okay? So those would be the two main losses. And I also mentioned that don't think about this necessarily just from the surface or just occurring vertically, but if you've got a soil up on a hillside, you're going to have a tendency for movement that way. So you might be having constituents leave the soil laterally as a possibility. But anyhow, these would be the two main losses. Well, if we get into the category of translocations or transfers, we can start to list a bunch of things here. And there's some really good words in here, especially if you like any of you play Scrabble, you've got a goal mine here. The first thing that is mentioned is a coupled process. I'll write it out. Eluviation and illuviation. Note the spelling. What would this refer to? I think we've talked about illuvial clays and an eluvial horizon. Not leaching, technically, but just the movement from an eluvial. What's the example of the eluvial horizon we talked about? An E horizon. And think about a soil profile where you have an E horizon, maybe overlying a BHS. Well, the E horizon represents the zone of eluviation, and this B horizon represents the zone of illuviation. And there are a lot of different components that can be eluviated and illuviated in a soil profile. So this is kind of a general term here, but there's some more specific examples. How about this one? Comes from a French word, lessivage. Anybody ever heard this term before? Well, lessivage refers specifically to the mechanical migration or movement or flushing of clays from one point in the soil profile to a lower point. So, call it mechanical flushing of clays. And the thing that drives this is percolating water. As water moves down through a soil profile, these clays are the finest particles, and in particular, when we talk about the movement of clays, it's the fine clays that are especially susceptible to this. But these percolating waters carry fine clays down, and then as the soil dries out or that water movement stops for whatever reason, those clays get deposited in the illuvial horizon, and you end up with what would be the horizon designation for the net product? A BT horizon. So this is just a fancy word that we use to describe one mechanism by which a BT horizon will form, lessivage, just this mechanical flushing of the clays. It's a good way to impress your friends. You throw that word into a conversation. I mean that the clays are not dissolved, they're not being chemically altered, they're just being physically carried by the way that sediment would be carried in a stream. Because there's other types of movement that we're going to talk about here that, well, in fact, the next one I've got on my list, that is not a mechanical movement so much as it involves chemical changes. And I'll put this up here. This is another coupled process, and we're going to call it calcification, decalcification. And this is a process that we associate with calcium carbonate, CaCO3. And this is an extremely important process in soils that have calcium carbonate in it, which is most of the soils found in arid and semi-arid regions of the world. So calcium carbonate, major soil constituent. How easily is calcium carbonate dissolved in water? Anybody know? You ever tried to dissolve lime in water? It's very limited solubility. You know, you'd be unable to dissolve even a gram of calcium carbonate in a liter of water. But if you want to increase the solubility of calcium carbonate in water, what's one more ingredient we could add? Very common ingredient in a soil environment. Think about a gas.
CO2.
Carbon dioxide, good. Because if you take calcium carbonate, well, let's back up. If you take water and carbon dioxide, they mix together, what do you get? Carbonic acid, yeah. And this greatly enhances the solubility of calcium carbonate. So what happens, I'm going to draw this as a reversible type of an equation, but we take calcium carbonate up here, which is a solid, and we mix it with carbonic acid, which is just water and CO2, and what we end up with are a calcium ion and the bicarbonate ion, and both of these are soluble. In other words, they'd be dissolved in soil solution in ionic form. So this arrow where we're taking calcium carbonate and essentially dissolving it in water, we would call decalcification. And if we do the reverse of this, we would call that calcification, where we're taking dissolved calcium ions and bicarbonate ions and then forming calcium carbonate from it. Well, anyway, this combination of reactions is what produces what sort of a soil horizon? What would be the designation for it most commonly? BK horizon. And if you think about how this operates within a soil profile, a little basic chemistry here. If we want to drive this reaction from here down to here, where we're solubilizing the calcium carbonate, how can we do that? What ingredients do we need to drive this reaction downward the way I've drawn it?
Water and CO2.
And where do you find that in a soil profile? Well, water may be throughout the whole thing, but I said that this is something that takes place in soils of arid, semi-arid regions. Where's most of the water there? Well, it's probably going to be in the upper part of the soil, and it may only be for certain times of the year, right? Where's most of the CO2 in a soil? Where would you find most of the carbon dioxide? Yeah, where the microorganisms are and where the roots are, which is probably the A horizon or the upper part of the soil profile. So we've got the ingredients in the upper part of the soil, and then as this we solubilize these, we've got the bicarbonate, the calcium ion, this moves downward. What happens to the soil? Well, it dries out. There's less CO2. What's going to happen? Well, this goes back the other way, and then the calcium carbonate precipitates out. So that's why we see these BK horizons. And in general, the more precip we get in a soil, the deeper that BK horizon is going to be. And we'll see lots of examples of that, but very important one. A very similar type of process to this, you might call salinization and desalinization. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. The only difference here is that we're talking about soluble salts. So it's essentially all we need is water. And if you think about something like table salt, sodium chloride, you can dissolve a bunch of that in water. So if you have it in the soil and you move water through it, you're going to move a lot of that sodium chloride down to where it dries out and eventually will precipitate out. What kind of horizon would form as a result of that process of salinization, desalinization, coupled process? Probably not. It possibly, but more. I think there's a better answer.
BZ.
Yeah, BZ. Because BN, we're talking specifically about sodium salts, and those are not necessarily going to be the dominant salts that you find in a lot of environments. All right. How about? This is a good one. Move over here. Stuff doesn't erase very well, does it? Here's a good word for you. Podzolization. It's a killer in Scrabble because you got the two Z's in it. A lot of points there. Anybody ever heard this term before? Know what it means? Well, if we want to define this, we're going to define this as the chemical migration of humus, and let's say often with aluminum and iron. Now, because this is a chemical migration, we talk about humus here. This is actually dissolved humus or forms of organic matter that are soluble in water. And what we're doing is taking this humus, and most of the time it's hooked up with iron and aluminum in various forms, and moving that down in the soil a little bit, translocating it or transferring it. What soil horizon would we be forming as a result of podzolization?
If E went, because it's going from the E down.
Okay, E would be part of it. And what will we find below the E? Well, we've got alluvial humus with iron and aluminum. How about BHS? Remember that one? Well, it turns out this process here, podzolization, is the defining process in one of the soil orders that we're going to consider later on. And that soil order is? The spodosols, yeah. This formation of an E and BHS horizon. But podzolization, very common in humid areas, forest environments, and it produces some of the most striking soil profiles you'll ever want to see. Yeah.
Does it have to be an E horizon?
Well,
above the BHS?
In most cases, you're going to get an E horizon because what you're doing is taking this humus and moving it out. So what gets left behind is really uncoated mineral grains, and so it's going to be very light colored. I wouldn't say it's 100% of the time, but for all intents and purposes, you get both of these as a result of podzolization. Okay, another process related here, desilication. What chemical element are we talking about here? Silicon. And over time, this is actually, you can think of it as a translocation or maybe even more of a loss. But normally we think about silica, which is often written as SiO2. Remember, silicon is a very common ingredient in most soils. In fact, on a weight basis, it's the second most abundant element. And over time, you think about all these minerals that contain silicon. Silicon has a slight solubility, but over time what happens is the silicon gets removed or leached out of a soil profile. And when that happens, we end up, remember this horizon? B with the O subordinate distinction. Do you remember how we defined that? It's a residual accumulation of, yeah, iron and aluminum oxide. And the reason that we get a residual accumulation, it's not because we're adding iron and aluminum to that soil, it's because we are getting rid of silica. So over time, think about these oxisols, the intensely weathered soils, you end up often with these really red B horizons in there, or BO horizons, and they have a considerable amount of iron and aluminum in them. And the reason is we've lost a lot of the silica that was there originally. And so this is the residual accumulation. Yeah?
Where does that silica go?
Well, it eventually ends up in groundwater and oceans, and then part of the global silicon cycle. But it does get lost from soils, whereas the iron and aluminum oxides, these sesqui oxides that we talked about, in a well-drained soil, these things are going to persist for a long, 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 long time, extremely stable. Yeah, Mateo.
Is it possible that the oxidation turned in the desiccation? Because it seems that...
Normally, if you look at the chemical reactions, humus is very reactive with aluminum and iron, but not so much with silicon. So you generally don't see much movement of silicon as a result of podzolization. You might get a little bit, but we're talking really about the extreme example there where it's essentially gone from the soil.
But the weather condition may be the same, so the humid, a lot of precipitation.
It could be. I'd say the major difference is podzolization, you can get to occur within probably a number of decades, or it's more on a century time scale. This idea of desilication is something that's on a much, much longer time scale. You're getting into hundreds of thousands of years, most likely. Let that one go. Well, the last general category, these transformations, I do a lot better if I could just show you the examples, but let me just list some of the more important ones, and then I guess we're going to have to pick this up next week. But I would encourage you, take a look at the table in your book, table 5.1, and you'll see these things with the definition. So if we talk about transformations, here's the kind of the general expression of that in terms of decomposition and synthesis. So here again, it's this concept of a coupled process where you're decomposing something and at the same time you're reforming something else. We're not gaining or losing something here, we're just changing the chemical or physical form of it. What would be an example of this couple process of decomposition and synthesis?
Decaying organic matter.
Decaying organic matter. Very good example. Mineral weathering, where we might be taking a primary mineral like feldspar or mica, and we are breaking that down, but at the same time, we're forming a clay mineral in a soil, a secondary weathering product. Lots of examples of this. Some more specific examples And I know this is a lot of vocabulary, but you'll see these terms again. Humification, what do you suppose that refers to?
Humus?
Yeah, the formation of humus. So it's essentially taking organic residues, plant material, animal materials, and the conversion of that into soil organic matter or humus. And it's a pretty involved process, and I would have to say we don't really understand it that well. Tell you what, I'm going to stop there, and I'll take a little bit of time on Tuesday and hopefully get this finished up, see if I can figure out what the problem is with our projector. So come to this room at 1:30, and we'll get set up for lab, give you a little bit of guidance, and then we'll turn you loose into the hallways and the teaching lab. And there'll be some more textures for you to practice on, too. So get your hands warmed up.
Is there any way we can check our work, or is it just kind of...
Well, as I told you before, it's not like there's going to be a right and a wrong answer on these things, but there's going to be some better ways to do it. And I'd be happy to go over any of them and offer my thoughts on it, but another soil scientist might give you another interpretation. So I don't have the right answer, is what I'm trying to say. And you can turn in your homework here. If you don't have it with you, just bring it to lab. Anytime today is fine.
I was going to ask.
Anytime today is fine.
Julia. Yes, it's just fine.